Assalamualaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. Yes, that'd be different. Just wonderful to have all of you tuning in. It's via the audio streaming, medium wave 1548 in Satellite Islam. And we've had some wonderful, wonderful weather for the last couple of days. Well, some people may not consider it wonderful, but we have lots and lots, in fact, buckets of rain, and we are truly, truly grateful. Yes, our heart goes out to those who do not have shelter and those who do not find comfort in their homes because it's, you know, leaking and so forth. But we are truly, truly blessed. And this morning we've got a wonderful guest, and that's Michelle. And Michelle's no stranger to Radio Islam. She's always so informative, going to share some wonderful, wonderful ideas. And wherever you are this morning, please listen close up and intently. We've got some giveaways. So we've got three giveaways, and you could be the winner of those giveaways if you listen very intently and answer the questions. And with me online this morning is Michelle. Hi, good morning, Michelle.
Morning, Islam.
How are you keeping this morning, Michelle?
Very well, thank you.
Thank you very much. And we know we've had, you know, buckets of rain outside. I know it's been like that in many parts of the country. Tell us your experience the last couple of days.
We've also had a lot of rain, and we're very grateful for it. But unfortunately, some of the plants don't enjoy it. But that's just one of those things.
Yes, well, while some of the plants, I know some of the people also don't enjoy, but we're truly, truly blessed. And I know that when we're talking about the beginning of the season, we said we're going to have a wonderful season. Then it came and said there was, you know, signs of drought, and the drought then intensified. And then there were reports of, you know, the rains coming in March. And so now, yes, lo and behold, we do have the rains. But I don't know, you know, Michelle, growing up, I didn't experience the term, you know, flash floods in our part of the world. We knew that it was going to rain. But very seldom these days we see there's lots of flash flood warnings. Do you find that also, are you also finding that happening?
Yes, no, definitely. And we find that from experience, if you have a wet autumn, you seem to have a much colder winter. So I think we're in for a cold one this year.
Well, you know, that's sort of to start, you know, I'm not sure how to interpret weather any longer, you know. Not that I could ever do that, but, you know, when you're looking at the reports, and I look at something that came out last week, and the first spokesperson said, well, the El Nino effect is with us for another 2 years. So I said, wow, if that's for another 2 years, I wonder what a winter we're going to have, because, well, the El Nino doesn't mean that we're going to have a sort of an Indian summer going into winter. Would that be the case? Or, like you said, people say that we have a very wet autumn, we normally, because the ground is soaked, we can have a very cold winter. I'm not really sure of it, Michelle. Are you able to understand, make something out of this?
No, most definitely not. I mean, the weather is so upside down, there's no way that one can actually predict what's going to happen.
No, definitely. But like I said, you know, the people, the scientists are saying El Nino is still there. Others say that drought hasn't been broken. Whatever it is, but we're truly grateful the rain has come. And if it has gone, and I'm not sure, you're closer to the catchment area, if it happens in the place where our waters are stored, I think that's fantastic, because then we would have, you know, water to go through. And again, you know, whilst all that is happening, the lessons that we've learned in the last couple of months shouldn't be forgotten. Now that we've got abundance of rain, especially in our part of the world, oh, well, fine, it's fine, let's go back to our old habits. I think that is something that we should be very careful about.
Most definitely, because there's still towns that have no water, and as you say, those areas that have water, people tend to then all of a sudden think they've got enough water, and then they go back to their old habits of wasting water. So the drought has definitely taught us a lesson that we need to really look after the water that we have.
And, you know, it's a scarce resource. It is something that we understand, and South Africa lives in an area, or rather South Africa is an area which is, you know, water scarce. And we've got to understand that maybe for the next few years we do have the rains. It doesn't mean we've got to waste. Remember, every drop that is saved is a drop that was valuable, not only to us but to everyone. And I think those are the lessons that, if nothing else, I think this past summer has taught us that rain is a valuable resource, and we've got to find every way, every means of trying to preserve, not only preserve, but also how to utilize it in a way that we get maximum use.
No, most definitely.
Now, let's go on to, you know, Michelle, there's so many things that we want to chat about, but I thought we'd start with something this morning that we haven't done and haven't touched on, and that's indoor plants. Now, indoor plants, Michelle, is nothing new. I think there hasn't been a kitchen, or a stoop in the old days, or today a patio, that hasn't got some indoor plant. But suddenly there seems to be a revival. They say that not since the 1970s have indoors seen such popularity. And we find there's a number of reasons for that. You're going to share some of those things with us, But this morning, we want our listeners to listen up very closely, very intently. You're going to ask us a couple of questions. We've got three giveaways that we're going to give, after each of the questions that we pose. So let's go through it. Michelle, indoor plants. Tell us your take on indoor plants.
Well, there is definitely a movement towards more indoor plants. I think it's possibly because the gardens are becoming so much smaller in the complexes, with the result people don't have a lot of space outside, and therefore they're moving indoors. And, indoor plants, they not only beautify your home aesthetically, they also clean the air, so it makes it more healthy for you, and they remove harmful toxins out the air.
That's the one thing, and then of course we find that many people are downsizing, and then they're moving into apartments in the older day, or in the areas where they may have lived before. You know, they're the gardens, the sprawling garden. Now they're in a smaller space, and sometimes they don't have an individual garden. They may have, a communal garden that everyone in the complex uses. So they've got to bring some of that gardening into the home, and I find that is what's happening. So bringing some of those trends, bringing some of the environment of the outside into the environment of the outside indoors. Hello, Michelle.
Yes, sorry, Ismail. The line went dead for a second there.
Okay. I said now we bring in the outside inside. Is that what's happening?
Most definitely, yes. And I find people are using it also as a what shall I call it, a fashion statement, to have, for example, three of the same pots in a row like you would be doing with your decor. They seem to be using indoor plants as part of the decor, not so much as just having a plant in the house.
And those statements are powerful ones, because when you come in here, it's that wow factor, but you can have it, an indoor plant in a dinner table. I've seen that happening, an indoor plant in any space. And you find that when it is there, it's not just the aesthetic value, but there's lots of other value to these indoor plants. And I found something quite informative as I was researching this. It says that in 1984, NASA, that's the space agency, had studies demonstrating that indoor plants have the ability to remove unwanted volatile organic compounds from the air, which opened the door for future research into study of plants as the natural air filters. And that's the study that's coming through, that these plants are not just aesthetic, they're not just beautiful, but they're also there filtering the air. So many of us are not even aware that this is such an important role. And if we're working in stuffy offices or we're living in homes, we can use these beautiful green plants, in our homes that would purify the air.
No, most definitely, and they've even proven in studies that people that work in offices where there are plants seem to be a lot more productive than those that work in offices where there are no plants.
Now, when you talk about indoor plants, let's go through some of the things. What would you consider an indoor plant?
Things like your flowering indoor plants would be something like African violets. I'm sure all the older ladies, everyone's granny had an African violet in the house. And then, of course, now for winter, the cyclamens are probably one of the most showy of the winter indoor plants. The normal potted chrysanthemums, I know that they are one of the best air purifiers. And the advantage of them is that once they've finished blooming inside, you can actually plant them out in your garden and they'll come up every year.
So we have, we're spoiled for choices. And just going back to, something that that I had to have a chuckle about was the African violet, because it was something that we found in many homes, and people would just take a leaf from a neighbor or whoever they're visiting and, take it home and plant, and it would definitely take root.
That's right, yes. And something interesting is that it actually takes 9 months from when you take the leaf cutting to get the plant to a saleable size. So it takes as long as what a baby takes to grow for an African violet from when the grower puts it in until he can sell it.
Wow, that's quite a long period of time. But when you do find that there's something about an African violet, we're going to talk about. Let's just leave it for a while about how fussy it is. So we've got a number of plants that we can talk about. The ones that I always think about are those with the big green leaves. You find that in many offices, people come in and you find those big green ones. They look like fingers. Those are one of the plants. There's a number of the big leaf plants that people use in offices and even in homes.
That's right. Yes. Some of your palms do very well indoors. And then your peace lily, which has the white sail-shaped white flowers and broad green leaves, they do very well, especially in dark passages or in dark bathrooms. And then your plants with the bigger leaves, like your delicious monster, they perform very well inside. Even the yuccas, which have the spiky leaves, they also do well inside. The thing that one must remember about the indoor plants is that some of them require bright light and even possibly a little bit of sun through a window, whereas others can take it quite dark. So one needs to make sure that when you're selecting your indoor plants, that you select the right one for the position.
Yes, and I think it's become very trendy now for mother-in-law's tongues to be used all over. I found that happening in many of the office spaces where you find that lots and lots of the mother-in-law's tongues have been planted, whether in an individual pot and a lot of them grouped together, or just three of them. And I found that they make such stunning displays. Have you seen some of that happening?
Yes, they make a very striking display, and they certainly have become very popular. And there's a couple of new, shorter varieties available, and I find people use them in quite modern containers, so they give you a much more modern effect. And, of course, they can handle a fair amount of dark, and they don't need quite as much water because they're part of the succulent family.
So you would say that because, you know, they're not too fussy and could, you know, withstand some neglect, they would make them more popular?
Most definitely, yes.
Now, when you're looking at that range, what else do we have that people could use in the similar vein, like the mother-in-law's tongues? Is there any other succulents or something else that we could perhaps use in a home or in an office space?
Most of the succulents prefer bright light, so I find that they do better outside. The echeverias, those that look like roses, they tend to do quite well indoors.
And then, you know, whilst we're talking about that, Would a good rule apply? I'm asking, you know, perhaps haven't have any of these plants indoors, but take them out for a half a day or a day outside in the sun and bring them in. Would that be a good practice, or is that not something that would be approved?
I wouldn't take them out and put them in full sun. What I often do recommend is that when we're having a light shower, that one actually takes them out to the soft rain in a shady spot, just so that they get washed clean and also that they have some fresh air. And I find that often when indoor plants are looking a bit tired and tatty, if you do that, take them out when there's a light shower, they seem to just feel so much better afterwards and revive. But I certainly wouldn't be taking them in and out every day, except if you've got things like bonsai. Unfortunately, most of the stuff that's been chosen to make bonsai from is outdoor trees, and some people insist on keeping them inside. So with bonsai, you would probably need to take them out almost daily to get a bit of fresh air.
Yes, I think that's the difference, because bonsai is not actually an indoor plant. It's an outdoor plant that has been just made into a miniature form, and people need to understand that you know, it is not an indoor plant. And what you said is, you know, that you should take that. The others, again, Michelle, I'm just trying to think, though, whilst you say that you should have bright light, what happens that, when you have heating, we're now going to the coldest, period or the colder environment, and we're going to have some very cold days, and then we're going to have the heating systems all on. How would that impact on indoor plants?
The heating definitely dries the soil out, with the result that one possibly needs to have a look at increasing your watering. And some indoor plants, for example, the cyclamen, prefer to draw their water from the bottom, and they definitely don't like heat. They're a winter bulb, so in other words, they prefer the cold weather, so they certainly wouldn't be happy in a position that's warm. Your African violets would, of course, love it because they prefer it slightly on the warmer side. And something interesting I just want to mention about the African violets, too, is that they're actually sociable plants. They definitely do grow better if you have three or four or five together than when you have just one. They've actually proven that.
Wow, so they'll be talking to each other. You think they find themselves cozy in a gossip environment?
Probably, yes.
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, but again, let's go back to the African violets. African violets are very, very popular, but something about African violets is something that I found is that if you're not very careful about watering them, you can kill them, because as soon as they're exposed to a little bit of water, you find that the leaves start browning and then die off. Is that correct?
That is true, Ismail. The thing is, they don't like the water on their leaves. So one needs to be careful when you're watering them that you'd make sure, first of all, that you don't use ice-cold water. You use rather tepid water or room temperature water, and you don't get the water on their leaves. And unfortunately, if they're standing in a position where it's a little bit too hot, they're inclined to get mealybug, and it's very difficult to get rid of it because their leaves are so sensitive. So it makes it so difficult to choose a poison that's going to work. So one must just make sure that you keep your eye on them if they're in a warm position, that the minute you see the mealybug, that you get rid of it before you need to spray.
And then would a good idea be, you know, to, when you're watering them, to immerse the plant into a tub so that the water is drawn in from the root? Would that be an idea? I'm just looking at...
Not for the African violets, because I think it might be too wet for them, because they like a soil that drains quite well. So one must be very careful not to overwater them. Basically, the only time you would really need to submerge a whole plant is when you found that it had actually wilted. And I have explained previously on the radio that if something is wilted, it's very difficult to establish whether it's over or under watering, and the only way to tell for sure is to actually submerge the whole pot and then to monitor the bubbles. If there are lots of bubbles, it means the plant is dry, and if there's no bubbles, the plant is too wet, and then adjust your watering according to that. But most of the indoor plants prefer their water from the top. As I say, the cyclamen prefers to draw it up from the bottom because it's a bulb, and if you water from the top, you can actually make the bulb rot. Things like anthuriums, which are also very popular, particularly in the more tropical areas, they like a lot of humidity around them. So what one can do in that case is you can actually take a tray and fill it with pebbles and water and place your plants on top of that so that there's humidity around them, but they're not physically standing in water. And that's also a good idea when one's going away. One can do the same so that you give your plants a good soaking and then put them on a tray of pebbles and water so that there's enough humidity around them.
Another plant that's become very fashionable, an indoor plant, has become the orchid. You find that, you know, every indoor magazine or something has an orchid on display. What is the reason for the popularity of the orchid?
I think it's because they just have such exotic blooms, and perhaps because the moss orchid in particular, the Phalaenopsis, just flowers for months. Some customers have reported to me that they've bought Phalaenopsis and they've flowered for 6 months non-stop. And I think it's just because they're such an exotic flower and everyone wants to have them.
And how difficult are they to care for? You know, are they as sensitive as the African violet, or are they easier? And, you know, they don't come in very cheaply. When you buy an Africa, when you buy an orchid, it is quite costly. Was that initial outlay something that's value for money?
Yes, I think so. Because they flower for so long, if you compare them to a bunch of flowers, you know, the cost is probably the same as a decent bunch of flowers these days, and they just give you so many months of beauty, and they're actually a lot easier than people think. I think because they're so exotic, people think that it's so difficult to take care of them, but they're certainly, to my mind, much easier than an African violet. What one needs to remember with the Phalaenopsis orchids is that they're an epiphyte, which means where they occur naturally, they occur in the trees, and they get their moisture from the air because they have aerial roots. So often when you buy them, they have these roots coming out on top of the pot, and that's the roots that collect their moisture. And one only needs to give them the equivalent of 3 blocks of ice once a week. That's the amount of water that they require. And I find often people overwater them, and then what happens is the roots actually rot, and then they can't take up water anymore.
So let's just go back. So we need about 3 blocks of ice. Is that what we're saying? That's
once
equal to
a week. Yes.
Wow, that's very little, because if you look at it. And then you spoke about, you know, plants taking in, you know, that cling themselves to sort of trees and so forth. I found some of that also becoming fashionable and being brought into the home. Would that be easy to care for?
What was that, Ismail?
You know,
at the moment.
I'm sorry. The plant that you refer to that, you know, has its aerial roots.
Oh, the aerial roots. That's the Phalaenopsis, the moss orchid, yes.
Yeah, you know, but the other plants that you have that, you know, find and cling themselves to trees and draw the moisture from that. Now, I'm not too sure of the name of that particular plant. I think I've got some Tilladensia, I think. Is that Tilladensia? Is that the correct name?
Tilladensia, that's correct, yes. That's one of the air plants. And as well as your different bromeliads, the listeners from Durban will know exactly what we're talking about. All the bromeliads, they're from the pineapple family, and their leaves look very much like a pineapple plant. And then you have often a pink flower in the middle, or yellow or orange flower spikes. And they're all part of the bromeliad family, which is also epiphytes air plants. And they they like their water in the middle of their crown.
And then, when you bring these indoor, are they difficult to look after? I'm looking at these air plants because, you know, they draw, where would they draw their moisture from? Because
basically, the bromeliad types that have the more pineapple-shaped rosette of leaves, shall I say, they prefer their water in the middle, whereas the other air plants that are actually just hang in the air, one can take a spray can and mist them down in summer daily, and obviously in warmer areas you'll need to do it more often. They can hang outside, but for the winter and frosty areas you'll need to bring them in. And as I say, with the spray can you can just mist them, and that's where they will get sufficient moisture from.
The philodendron, you know, that is something that's been very popular over the years, and you find that, you know, they creep and they trail quite a bit, and in offices and homes. Tell us something about the philodendron.
Philodendrons, one gets quite a few different varieties. The ones with the small heart-shaped leaves are the Philodendron scandens. Those are the typical ones that one sees in the offices, sort of crawling all along the partitions and on the top of the cupboards and so on. And they do well in low light. And then the one Philodendron, the Philodendron solium, has huge leaves which eventually reach sort of half a meter in diameter. And that's often confused with the Monstera. And they also prefer low light and do very well in offices, especially in offices where you need partitions between two people working together, because they reach about 1.5 meters in height, provided they've got a decent-sized pot.
Yes, I think so. It's time for us to ask one or two questions. Can we go ahead with them? Would you like to ask a question?
Me ask a question?
Yes, we ask a question that, you know, we want to give away. I've got some giveaways.
Yes, giveaways. I'm so sorry, Isman, and I beg your pardon, the listeners, but the line this morning seems to be very bad. I'm really straining to listen what's happening.
Sorry, can you hear me now? Is that a bit better?
It's a little bit better, yes.
I'm not sure. Maybe it's because of all the rain. I'm not even sure if our lines are bad. But what I'm saying is that do we have any questions that we can ask our listeners? We would like to ask them two questions. We've got three giveaways. We'll do two giveaways now and one after the break. Maybe I go for the first question? You'll ask the second one. Okay. Listeners, if you have an orchid, what is the amount of water that you should be given? I think Michelle has spoken about the number, dial 854-1548. The amount of water, the ideal amount of water that should be given to an orchid. Michelle has given us some indication. The number to dial 854-1548. Michelle, would you like to ask the second question?
Yes, I'd like to know, for a grower, when they take a leaf cutting of an African violet, how many months does it take before they can sell the plant?
Well, that's another wonderful question. Yes, if you have taken a leaf cutting of an African violet, how long will it take for it to get to maturity? The number to dial this morning, 854-1548. You know, another plant that I was looking at, Michelle, was very, very interesting for me, and I haven't really seen much of it. It's called the staghorn fern. Tell us something, because it looks like, you know, the staghorn, the stag that you get out there, the wild deer. Is that the deer family?
And you know, that type of... That's the deer family, yes.
Now, that particular fern, tell us something about that fern.
That fern is also, well, first of all, ferns like a lot of moisture, and they normally don't like direct sun. And the staghorn fern is also more of an epiphytic fern, which means it's like an air plant. They often attach them to logs, or they have special pots, because they have these huge, I suppose one can call them feet, for want of a better word. There's actually these leaf pads that sucker onto the branches to attach the plant, and then they get their moisture from the air. And you can actually attach them to a log with an old stocking until they've had a chance to actually sucker properly onto the log, and then you can hang it up under a tree or on your stoop, or in a fairly bright position indoors, but not where they get direct sun. And you can take banana peels and actually place it on these pads of them, because they apparently also enjoy getting the nutrients from the banana peels.
Thank you very much. I think we've been inundated with a number of calls. Let's take the first call online. Assalamu alaikum. Please go ahead. Hello, assalamu
alaikum.
The question with regards to the amount of water that we need for an orchid, yes.
Yes, it's 3 blocks of ice a week.
3 blocks of ice?
A week,
yes, the equivalent of 3. Thank you very much. Just leave your number with our engineer, and we'll take down your details. JazakAllah, thanks for calling in.
JazakAllah.
The next caller, we have another call online. Assalamu alaikum. Hello. Assalamu alaikum. Hello, assalamu alaikum. Hello. Please, can you hear me?
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me? Please go ahead with the answer.
Hello, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam, Jibin.
The answer about the African violet, it takes 9 months to come to bloom.
Thank you very much. Leave your name and details with our engineer, and we'll take down your contact details.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. And yes, Michelle, here we've had, they're listening very close and very intently this morning, Michelle. That brings us to the end. That brings us to the end of this first segment. We're going to go for a news break. When we come back, we'll continue. Stay tuned. Dear to do different, Ismail Buriyaw is my name. Jazakumullah khair for tuning in, whether it's via the audio stream, Midway 1548 in Satellite Islam. Wherever you are this morning, if you're tuning in, whether it's in your bed and you're still relaxing on the breakfast table with family, or outside and listening to us, it's some beautiful weather we've had. And wherever you are, if you'd like to join our conversation, number to that, 854-1548. We've got a wonderful guest this morning, and that is Michelle Kudzik from Brian Miller's Nursery out just outside Vereeniging. And she's sharing some wonderful information. We're talking about indoor plants, and there's a move for it's become fashionable to have indoor plants. And I'm just looking at some of the articles that have come to me in recent week. It says if you use decorative foliage, it's better suited, more adaptable to indoor environments than flowers. It says select plants with a variety of shapes, textures, colors, and patterns for a graphic effect. And for variety, choose climbing, trailing plants, decorative baskets, terrariums, bottle plants, and use plants as room dividers and in window areas. So there's lots and lots of ideas. And like I've said earlier in the program, there hasn't seen a revival like this ever since the 70s on indoor plants. And one of the things that I was really fascinated about was that indoor plants are not just there to, for beautifying the environment, for aesthetics, but it also acts as an air filter. So wherever you are, remember that they play a very meaningful role. And like Michelle has said earlier in the program, there's been a study showing that where you are surrounded by greenery, you seem to be doing far better. Hi, good morning, Michelle. Thank you for being with us once again.
Morning, Israel.
Thank you very much. Is the line much clearer now?
It is, thank you. I apologize to the listeners.
I do apologize as well. I wasn't too sure what had happened, but I've asked the engineer to sort it, and I think that's been done. Thank you to our two listeners who've called in, and you stand to collect your prizes, but we will make the arrangements after the program. And Michelle, we're talking about indoor plants now. Indoor plants become very fashionable, and we know there's a number of reasons for that. Would there be special care that you'd need? Could you just take any plant and put it indoors? Would you need special soil? Would you need special? Or just tell us some of the things, because I think if we've been looking at the garden industry, there have been so many innovations made. It's been making life so much easier. They've got now very specific types of mediums in which to grow. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes. The best medium to grow indoor plants in is potting soil. And certain indoor plants that need a lot more water, one can actually take palm peat, which is a compressed peat moss that's been compressed into like a brick shape, if I can put it that way. That's what one would buy in the garden center. And you can mix it into your potting soil to help retain water. But having said that, there's also some companies that have actually already mixed it into their potting soil.
Yes, and what about granules? Are there granules as well, that you put in so that, you don't have to, be too concerned about water? It would absorb the water, and when there's no water, release that. Is that correct?
Yes, there are quite a number of water-absorbing granules. Just off the top of my head, there's Stoccasorb, there's Terrasorb, there's Wetter Soil, there's Aqua Soil. They look literally like these little jelly balls that one uses in arrangements for fresh flowers. They look very much like that, and the idea is that they then retain the water so that your soil stays more moist. But as I say, some of the companies have actually mixed palm peat into their potting soil, which certainly helps retain a lot more water than the older potting soil, which used to just drain right through.
The number to dial this morning, 854-1540. If any queries, any questions, you could join our conversation. And number again, once 854-1548. Please do listen intently, because we have another prize to give away as well. Now, Michelle, when we spoke about all of these plants, which one would be your favorite as for an indoor plant? Which one do you consider?
Sure, that's very difficult. I enjoy the Staphylum very much, which is the one that has the white anthurium-type flowers. And for those of you that don't know what an anthurium looks like, they literally look like white sails, and they call it the peace lily. It's a very tough indoor plant, and it can take dark conditions. And I have one in my bathroom, and it's just been going on for years and years, and that would probably be one of my favorites, but certainly not the only one.
Now, when you talk about, flowering you know, lots of people have created, they've got the encilliums, but it doesn't always flower. What would be the reason? Why wouldn't it flower?
It could be that there's not sufficient light for them or not sufficient humidity, because they like a lot of humidity. But what the listener certainly could try and do is use a plant food that's got a lot of potassium in, because potassium is the element that encourages fruiting and flowering.
So that would be the last number in, you know, in those 3-1, 3-5, something like that. But the one, the last number, is that correct?
The last one is potassium, correct. So 315 would have a high potassium content, for example.
Now, when we spoke about, you said that was your favorite one. Would you consider all succulents to be indoor plants?
No, definitely not, because, as I said earlier, the succulents need fresh air and they need sunlight. So there's certain varieties that do better than the others. The mother-in-law's tongue, which is a type of succulent, they do very well indoors. And as I said earlier on, the echeverias, which are the ones that look like roses. Some of the aloe type, not actually aloes, but those that look like aloes, they also perform well indoors. But in general, the succulents definitely do better outdoors, unless you're putting it right in your window, so that I find that they only last a couple of months and then you can see that they start deteriorating. It's as though they need the fresh air and the proper sunlight outside.
Question coming through, I've got an indoor palm and it seems to be having a mealybug. What would be the cause?
Usually when one gets mealybug and scale, it's a sign that the position where the plant is standing is either too hot or that there's not enough of an air movement. So often if one moves the plant to a better spot where there's more air movement, you find that the problem, you know, is alleviated. But there are, of course, poisons that one can use. But I'd also like to give the listeners a recipe for more of an organic alternative, and that is a teaspoon of grated sunlight soap.
Sorry, it's got to be grated, okay? 1 teaspoon
grated. Correct. It mustn't be sunlight liquid. It must be a teaspoon of the sunlight bar, the green bar, grated,
mm-hmm.
and a teaspoon of methylated spirits.
A teaspoon
half a cup of lukewarm water.
Methylated. I'm just writing. And methylated spirits, and then.
And a half a cup of lukewarm water.
Okay.
And that can actually be dabbed onto the mealybug with a cotton wool, which is nice and soft, that you're not damaging your palm. And that normally takes care of the problem. But the root of the problem is either air movement or the position is too hot.
So that recipe again, a teaspoon of grated soap, a teaspoon of methylated spirits, a half cup of lukewarm water. You mix it and thereafter you just dab it on with cotton wool. And that should do the trick.
Yes. And what one must remember, particularly with scale, which you get in white and brown forms, when scale is alive, it's actually sucking onto the plant, which means that it can't be scratched off easily. But the minute you can scratch it off easily, it's usually a sign that it's dead, because it's not sort of sucking on so hard anymore.
Well, thank you very much for that. I think that's very useful, that one there, that mealybug. I think lots of us would benefit from that particular recipe. Now, when we're looking at soil and conditions of soil and watering, what is one of the things that we should, you know, the watch points, what would kill most indoor plants?
Most plants are killed by overwatering, particularly indoor plants. The problem is a lot of people buy an indoor plant and they put it in a nice ceramic container because they want it to look nice, and they don't realize that the water builds up in the bottom of the pot and eventually the roots rot because they can't get oxygen anymore. So if one's got it in a nice ceramic pot, you need to at least once in 2 weeks pour out that excess water. Or if you've got it in a normal drip tray or a saucer, you also need to pour out that water. They can't stand in water. And often you'll see it that there's actually this white buildup of salt at the bottom of the pot, and that's from overwatering. So most indoor plants are definitely from too much water that they die rather than too little.
An interesting question. Are there any edible plants that can be grown indoors? Well,
I'm thinking of the top of my head.
I think this one stumped us. Yes.
I beg your pardon, Emma?
I think this one definitely stumped me.
Yes, now I can't think of one off the top of my head because, again, you know, they need sunlight and they need good air circulation. So I really don't think they'd be happy indoors. You know, even something like lettuce, they probably last a while indoors or even parsley, but you'll find that they'll start getting aphids because it's not a natural environment for them to be inside.
Maybe could we help them say there would be some indoor herbs? Would we plant that? Would that be an alternative?
Perhaps chives and parsley, I think they would last a certain amount of time indoors, yes. But then they'd probably get aphids from being too warm indoors.
Well, thank you very much for that. And Any other watch points with regards to indoor plants? You know,
First of all, as I said earlier, one needs to be very careful with the choosing the correct plant for the correct position. In other words, the light requirements, and particularly passages and bathrooms, because bathrooms tend to often be on the southern side of the house, which is colder and darker. So one needs to make sure that you choose the plants that are more suited to that area that can handle darker conditions, whereas your lounge is usually on the northern side, which gives a lot more light, and then it makes it so much easier. Just as a rule, generally the plants with colored leaves, and now I'm talking particularly to the people in Durban, the crotons, they all know the crotons down there, they have very nicely colored leaves and with yellow and red in their leaves, so those will need a lot more light. And in general, the plain green or the plants that have silver in their leaves, they can handle more dark. So the brighter the color of the leaves, the more light they need, and the darker or the duller, if you want to call it that, with the silver in the leaves, they can handle more dark.
Well, thank you very much. I think we've got a couple of watch points there. And what about, growing? Would they be able to transplant one? You know, do they take on quite easily if they're indoors?
Yes, you can transplant your indoor plant. And what you need to remember is that you can't go from a small container to a huge container. That doesn't work for the simple reason that the soil isn't used up and the soil often becomes sour. So one needs to gradually put them into bigger pots. So as they outgrow their pots, either climbing out the top or the roots coming out the bottom, it's a sign that they need to be repotted. And then you would soak them well first in a bucket of water and then plant them in one or two sizes bigger using potting soil, making sure that it's at the same depth, which is quite important, and then firming the potting soil on the side and then watering them well afterwards.
One question still coming in. I've seen some beautiful displays of water with plants in them and their roots on display. Tell us something about that.
That's some of the bulbs. In summer, the only bulb that seems to work effectively like that is the amaryllis bulbs. And then now at this time of the year, there's various options. There's your daffodil or narcissus paper whites, which are tall and early flowering miniature white daffodils. And, of course, your hyacinths. They can be grown on water. So what you do is you use either marbles or pebbles, which you place in a nice bowl. And I like to use a glass bowl because then you can actually see the roots. And then you place your bulbs on top of the marbles or pebbles, and you fill it with water, but the water mustn't touch the bottom of the bulbs. And then they actually grow in between the pebbles, which anchor them and keep the plant steady. And then they flower like that in the glass vases.
Well, thank you very much for that one. And the number to dial this morning, 854-1548. Any more queries, any more questions? We're now moving on, and it's that time of the year. It's an in-between season. Some of your tips that we could share with our listeners.
Yes, at this time of the year, as the weather's cooling down, I mean, this morning was quite chilly here with us. One can definitely see a change in the temperature. So it's time to start thinking about the winter seedlings. And for shade areas, your primroses, your primulas, your foxgloves, your aquilegia, and your mimulus are probably the best choices. What I just have to mention about the foxgloves and the aquilegias is that they have to be planted now to go through the winter in order to flower in spring. You can't plant them in spring and expect a spring show. So those two need to go through the winter. And then for sunny spots, your poppies, pansies, and poppies, pansies, stocks, calendulas, alyssum, dianthus, petunia, and gazanias are probably the best choice for the winter. And then, of course, there's bulbs that can go in now, things like ranunculus and anemones, and there's a lot of indigenous bulbs that can be planted now, and there's definitely a movement towards indigenous. I'd just like to mention a few quickly, Spiraxis, Ixias, Tritonias, Freesias, Sertanthus, and the Amaryllis belladonna. And of course, if you're wanting to plant seed or sow seed, your Namaqualand daisies, it's normally the right time of the year, but because it's so wet, I would recommend one waits a week or two, because otherwise you're going to find that they'll get mildew and rust in spring. So rather wait with them. But your things like your sweet peas you could put in now. And when sowing sweet peas, one needs to soak the seed for an hour or two. It definitely helps with the germination, as well as ranunculus and anemones. If you soak the bulbs overnight, you'll find that they germinate a lot quicker. And then apart from that, if I can just quickly mention the winter veggies, because we all are planting a lot more veggies because of the food prices. Your typical winter veggies are things like spinach, lettuce, onions, and then your cabbage family, which is your cauliflower, your cabbages, and your broccoli. And, of course, the orientals like the mizuna, the tatsoi, the pak choi, and the Japanese mustard, they can all go in now because they prefer the cooler weather. And then it's also time to plant garlic. And these days in the garden centers, they usually have more than one garlic.
garlic available. Some have the giant garlic as well as the purple garlic available. And this is the right time to get that in now.
Just to help us through the garlic, it's the giant garlic and the purple garlic, and that would be different from the wild garlic, is that correct?
That's right, yes.
So, and that would be available at garden centres. Just a little bit of I've had a query about garlic, you know, during the course of, how would you plant garlic?
Basically, your garlic that you get now at the moment, they call them garlic sets. So it's basically the cloves that have been separated and you plant them now. The problem is often the ones in the vegetable shops have been treated, so you can't plant those. So if you're wanting to plant garlic, rather buy the bulbs from a garden center. You'll find them on the bulb shelf usually. And you plant them now in sort of furrows. You can also do them in pots. But the one thing with garlic is one must remember it's quite a long crop. You plant them now and you'll only be harvesting sort of November.
Yes, yes, it takes quite a long while. And is ginger also the time, or is it ginger more summer crop?
Ginger's more a summer crop.
Ginger more a summer crop. Yes, and we seem to be running out of time. Have we one quick question from your side for our listeners this morning?
Yes, I think so. They must name two winter seedlings that can grow in shade.
Two winter seedlings that can grow in shade.
And
yes, thank you very much. Listeners, we have a question. Two winter seedlings that can grow in shade. The number to dial 854-1548. Two winter seedlings that can grow in shade. While waiting for that, some other hints and tips that we can share. What's going for winter?
If they start falling now, please don't rake them and drive them away to the dumps. Use them as a mulch on your beds.
I think that's such important advice. You know, when we see and I see lots of people just filling bags and bags and bags and throwing them away, and somebody said that is yellow gold.
It is. It certainly is. It makes such a difference to the quality of your soil, and also it reduces your watering that you need to give, and you won't have so many weeds.
The question that was asked this morning is two winter seedlings, number 854-1548. 854-1548. We're waiting for your calls, 854-1548. We've just got a couple of minutes before we close this morning's program, so please, if you have the answer, to call in now.
And I'd also like to tell the listeners that as it starts cooling down, they also need to start reducing their watering, particularly in the colder areas. Try not to water later than 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Do your watering in the morning so that your soil has time to dry out before the night temperatures kick in.
And what would be an ideal time? Would it be between 10 and 3 or would it be earlier than 10?
No, 10 and 3 is perfect, yes.
Okay, and just one quick question that's coming through. Tell us something about citrus. There's some queries about citrus.
Citrus need well-drained soil. So if your soil is slightly on the clayey side, you need to mix in coarse river sand. And what you can do is if you're planting in a pot, you would mix that with your potting soil. If you're planting in the garden, you would try and make it a slightly higher area than your surrounding area so that the water could drain away very well. So drainage is very important for citrus. They need potassium to produce fruit. So in other words, something like a 315 or a 234 would be sufficient. They also enjoy Epsom salts once a month.
Epsom salts once a month. Okay.
Yes.
We've got a call online. Let's just take that one. Assalamu alaikum. Please go ahead.
The winter seedlings are the fairy bromelias and foxgloves.
Are we happy with that one?
Perfect, perfect.
Thank you very much, and just leave your number with the engineers.
Okay.
Shukran, assalamu alaikum. And that brings us to the end of another wonderful program. Any other from your side, Michelle?
Not that I can think of. And of course, composting. If you're wanting to add compost to your garden, you need to first of all make your own compost now with the leaves, and then remember, as soon as it's really cold, sort of in June, July, you can then mix compost into your soil. And why I say at that time of the year is that you're not damaging the roots because nothing's growing actively at that time of the year.
And I just want to add, it doesn't mean now that the winters are cooling that you should be now neglecting your garden and saying, well, fine, wait for it to warm up. I think there's some wonderful opportunities to work with to garden winter, and many of us don't make use of that opportunity. Is that correct, Michelle?
That's true, yes. A lot of people seem to neglect the winter and the garden in winter, and it's so sad because there's so many beautiful things that can be grown in winter.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. And I do apologize for the earlier segment that you were not able to hear us, but thank you very much for being with us once again. Michelle, your address again, you are in Brand Millers. That's just outside Roshni. And any further directions?
Basically from Roshni, we're the second robot right, and you go down that road and we're on the left-hand side. So we're about literally 10 minutes from Roshni.
What can we expect on something that's special that you have that we...
Yes, we have quite a few specials at the moment. We've got potting soil on special. I've got some hardy winter herbs on special. There's some roses on special. I've got patio roses on special as well. So there's quite a few things going at the moment. And of course the winter bulbs are in and the winter seedlings are also in at the moment.
Thank you very much for all that information. You take care, everything of the best, and you enjoy the rest of the weekend. I know there's an extra day tomorrow, and the weekend is coming up, but you take care, look after yourself. Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you, Islam.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That is Michelle Kudze-Brand-Miller's nursery giving us some wonderful, wonderful wine sites. We do apologize. The first segment, she wasn't able to hear us clearly. And those of you that have, answer the questions, we'll make arrangements. You can please pick it up from Radio Islam. If you cannot, I'll get somebody to pick up your prize. That's all for me until we meet again, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.